Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Ready Your Future podcast. I'm Todd Sepulveda, a regular guy living in the suburbs who understands the need to be better prepared for the future. And I want to help you get prepared for your future too. Hey guys, we have pollen like crazy falling. It might as well be green snow. It's like our snow time here, I guess. Falling, and I'm a little stopped up, so bear with me dealing with the allergies and stuff. Today we're going to be talking about our failing power grid and the fact that power outages are coming. I think it can be an expectation that we're all going to experience here in the future. All right. So there was an article that I saw this many different areas. It was called Amid Explosive Demand, America is Running Out of Power. And so I saw it on, I guess people were linking to it from MSN, but it really was from the Washington Post. And so I think they were just republishing it there. I'm not going to read the whole article, but I pulled it off the internet and highlighted a few sections that I do want to read and talk about because I think they're important and they're relevant to us as people who want to be a little bit more prepared and self-reliant. I mean, you don't want to be caught in a situation where there's going to be multiple power outages. Just kind of imagine that, right? Imagine what happened when we went through COVID. And the minute people realized what was happening, like stores were like, they went completely overrun and there was nothing found in the stores. So imagine a situation when people realize that there's going to be power outages and we're going to start to experience them on a regular basis. You're not going to be able to get the things that you need to be prepared at that time. You need to get them now. So I want to talk about this because I think this is a really relevant topic. So again, the article is entitled Amid Explosive Demand, America is Running Out of Power, and I'm only going to read certain highlighted sections for you. So here we go. Vast swaths of the United States are at a risk of running short of power as electricity-hungry data centers and clean technology factories proliferate around the country, leaving utilities and regulators grasping for credible plans to expand the nation's creaking power grid. So in Georgia, demand for industrial power is surging to record highs with the projection of new electricity use for the next decade now 17 times what it was only recently. So guys, you who are living in Georgia, I mean, they had a prediction of what was going to be needed. And now because of all the increase in power that data centers have been adding to this, that is up 17 times. But Georgia, you're not alone. Arizona Public Service, the largest utility in the state, is also struggling to keep up, projecting it will be out of transmission capacity before the end of the decade, absent major upgrades. So the soaring demand is touching off a scramble to try to squeeze more juice out of an aging power grid while pushing commercial customers to go to extraordinary lengths to lock down energy sources such as building their own power plants. When you look at the numbers, this is a quote, "When you look at the numbers, it's staggering," said Jonathan Shaw, chairman of the Georgia Public Service Commission, which regulates electricity. "It makes you scratch your head and wonder how we ended up in this situation. How were the projections that far off? This has created a challenge like we have never seen before." So a major factor behind the skyrocketing demand is the rapid innovation in artificial intelligence, which is driving the construction of large warehouses of computing infrastructure that requires exponentially more power than traditional data centers. AI is also part of a huge scale-up of cloud computing. So tech firms like Amazon, Apple, Google, Meta, and Microsoft are scouring the nation for sites for new data centers, and many lesser-known firms are also on the hunt. The proliferation of crypto mining, in which currencies like Bitcoin are transacted and minted, is also driving data center growth. It is also putting new pressure on an overtaxed grid, the network of transmission lines and power stations that move electricity around the country. Bottlenecks are mounting, leaving both new generators of energy, particularly clean energy, and large consumers facing growing wait times for hookups. The situation is sparking battles across the nation over who will pay for new power supplies, with regulators worrying that residential ratepayers could be stuck with the bill for costly upgrades. Guys, that's you, that's me, right? The residential tax rate payers, right? That's who is going to to feel the effects here. So it is also it also threatens to stifle the transition to cleaner energy as utility executives lobby to delay the retirement of fossil fuel plants and bring more online. The power crunch imperils their ability to supply the energy that will be needed to charge the millions of electric cars and household appliances required to meet state and federal climate goals. All right, I want to jump around a little bit more here. Further down the article, utility projections for the amount of power they will need over the next 5 years have nearly doubled and are expected to grow. According to a review of regulatory filings by the research firm Grid Strategies. Then moving on, communities that had little connection to the computing industry now find themselves in the middle of a land rush, with data centers developing, flooding their markets with requests for grid hookups. So officials in Columbus, Ohio, Altoona, Iowa, and Fort Wayne, Indiana are being aggressively courted by data center developers. But power supply in some of these second choice markets is already running low, pushing developers even further out, in some cases into cornfields, according to JLL, a commercial real estate firm that serves the tech industry. So that's really interesting. And I know that John Haller, I talk about his prophecy updates that I listen to on Sundays and or through the week. And he talks about the data centers in Ohio all the time. All right, just a few more highlights here. Across the board, we are seeing power companies say, we don't know if we can handle this. We have to audit our system. We've never dealt with this kind of influx before, said Andy Sevengross, Managing Director of Data Center Markets at JLL. Everyone is now chasing power. They are willing to look everywhere for it. So already a soaring power consumption is delaying a coal plant closure in Kansas, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and South Carolina. All right, a few more here. Officials at Equinix, one of the world's largest data center companies, said they have been experimenting with fuel cells as backup power, but they remain hopeful they can keep the power grid as their main source of electricity for new projects. So one of the things, and I have these this in my notes, that if that winds up happening and a lot of companies start going to the fuel, you know, these fuel cells as backup power, that's probably going to take production away from the consumer, like you know, you and me, to focus more on commercial because, I mean, of course, they can always charge them more and they're going to focus their attention on them. And so it might not be as easy to get these battery backups and what we need to be able to have that backup power. So the logjam is already pushing officials overseeing the clean energy transition at some of the nation's largest airports to look beyond the grid. The amount of energy they will need to charge fleets of electricity or electric rental vehicles and ground maintenance trucks alone is immense. An analysis shows electricity demand doubling by 2030 at both the Denver and Minneapolis airports. By 2040, they will need more than triple the electricity they are using now, according to the study, commissioned by car rental giant Enterprise, Xcel Energy, and Jacobs, a consulting firm. All right, then, the Biden administration has made easing the grid bottleneck a priority, but it is a politically fraught process, and federal powers are limited. Building the transmission lines and transfer stations needed involves a huge land acquisition, exhaustive environmental reviews, and negotiations to determine who should pay what cost. Again, we're going to wind up paying, and you know, is that ever going to happen? Because we've been talking about our jacked up infrastructure for so long and things needing to be fixed. I mean, come on, you don't really think the government's going to fix all that for you, do you? So tensions over who gets power from the grid and how it gets to them are only going to intensify as the supply becomes scarcer. In Texas, a dramatic increase in data centers for crypto mining is touching off a debate over whether they are a costly drain or an overtaxed grid. And in an analysis by the consulting firm Wood Mackenzie found that the energy needed by crypto operations aiming to link to the grid would equal a quarter of the electricity used in the state at peak demand. Unlike data centers operated by big tech companies such as Google and Meta, crypto miners generally don't build renewable energy projects with the aim of supplying enough zero emissions energy to the grid to cover their operations. The result, said Ben Hertz-Schargel, who authored the Wood McKenzie analysis, is that crypto's drain on the grid threatens to inhibit the ability of Texas to power other energy-hungry operations that could drive innovation and economic growth, such as factories that produce zero-emission green hydrogen fuel or industrial charging depots that enable electrification of truck and bus fleets. So again, it's like, one of the things they talked about in the article too was like, okay, first come, first serve. So crypto mining was here, but we have this possibility to bring in new commercial enterprise business that would be able to hire more people, blah, 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 all that good stuff. But they're not going to be able to come in because the crypto mining companies already have, you know, all the power, you know, at least up to a quarter, which I think that's absolutely nuts there. So you can see, it's kind of like, if you start reading between the lines, you can start seeing that if people are realizing this now, and you know, we heard the date 2030, we heard 2040. And so, you know, they're looking into the future, they're going to start making moves now, which means you need to start making moves now, if this is something that is interesting to you and you want to have backup. So a couple of the key takeaways here, just to kind of recap on this article. There's been a big power demand surge, and it's straining our already aging power grid, right? It's going to challenge the utilities that are currently out there. So we have the data centers that are putting a big drain, and so you have the big tech companies as well as crypto mining, the clean technology factories, all the electric cars, all that kind of stuff. That's putting all this big demand on, demand on the power grid. And then you have the constraints of the power grid and what we have here. It's limited to what it can produce, right? It's like we're not bringing more factories online to be able to produce more. And then our power grid infrastructure is not strong. It's pretty weak. So there's bottlenecks and capacity constraints that are going to hinder the ability to, you know, have new business and for job growth and all that kind of stuff. But then also, it's taxed so much that when you start seeing things fail, you're going to start seeing a lot of things fail, right? And so one of the things that we experience, well, you've heard me talk about Winter Storm Uri a lot, if you've been a longtime listener, or at least you've listened since that time. And one of the reasons why the grid didn't have enough power is because it's wintertime and they were doing maintenance on some of the factories, because it's like, hey, it's wintertime. You don't need, you know, that's when the power needs are a lot lower. They weren't expecting this, you know, crazy freeze that was going to demand all this power. And so now you find yourself like, hey, the traditional times where they would do maintenance and stuff, when can they really do that? Because when they start taking factories and you know, power generation factories offline, then, you know, to do maintenance and stuff like that, well, then it just seems like there's always some issue and it's taxing the grid and all those different kinds of things. So again, you have, you know, our failing infrastructure, you know, the fact that they're not adding any new factories. We have this economic challenge, right? That it's going to hinder growth. You know, people keep saying, if you follow AI, it's like, you know, AI, you know, it might take some jobs, but it's going to create new jobs. Well, if they can't have the data centers to be able to run AI, it's not going to be able to create new jobs. And so you're going to have that. You're going to have regions now with limited power grid capacity, because people who maybe have never had to deal with this in the past, if you're starting to see data centers pop up in your area because maybe land is cheap and they can tie into the grid and all that kind of stuff, well, then they're going to start sucking, you know, that energy, that power from you, and you might start experience, you know, issues when you haven't experienced issues in the past. They were talking about, you know, certain businesses developing off-grid solutions. And again, I think it's really important to kind of process that out. If they start focusing on commercial enterprise businesses to build fuel cells for, then that's going to take away from the consumer market and things are going to be more expensive here, because it's just, you know, they'd rather spend the money for the commercial, because the commercial enterprises are going to get them a whole lot more money than just, you know, regular consumers like me and you. All right. So like I said at the beginning of this episode, this should be a concern for those of us who want to live a more self-reliant life, who are into readiness, who are into preparedness. And I just want to kind of point some of these things out. So our power grid is frail. We've been talking about that for a whole long time, and you just haven't seen any, I mean, the government has not, you know, moved to try to improve that one bit. It's just old. And it's not just the power grid. We have a lot of old infrastructure. You start thinking about roads, you start thinking about bridges, and, you know, bridges have collapsed and they're not putting money towards that, right? And we're sending it all over the world, you know, send a couple more $1 billion to Ukraine where we can, you know, invest that money into bridges and infrastructure and doing all those different kinds of things. Going back, I was reading some things on the EMP commission. And I think back in the day, I guess when it came out, I think it was like $400 million they could go ahead and secure our grid. I think that's what it was. It might be more than that, but you know, why wouldn't you do that before you send it over? If that was a real big concern, right? Not only do we have this, you know, it's old and the infrastructure is bad, but now it's susceptible to hackers and terrorist attacks. And we've seen that. We talked about that before. You know, not only that, you could have a ding dong, forget to flip a switch or leave a USB in or whatever it might be. And they can cause a whole city, right, to go down. That has happened before, right? The whole Eastern Seaboard to go down. But then the hackers, and you hear more and more of that right now as things are just ramping up on a global scale. And so You have that, right? The failing infrastructure, you have terrorism, you have hackers, you have, you know, ding-dongs who are working the grid. And then you got natural disasters, you know, hurricanes, you've got winter storm Uri and all that kind of stuff. And if it goes down, right, if it really goes down, a power grid, and this came up in our exclusive email group not too long ago, they're not sure how long it would really take to come back up. I mean, some of it would need to be phased in, like, what would that really look like? Are we talking about phased in like a couple of hours phased in? Are we talking a couple of days? Are we talking weeks phased in? And you think about what kind of situation that, you know, that would bring if we're talking about weeks of not having your, you know, everything else seems to be normal, but no electricity. And well, I'll talk about that here in just a minute. When Winter Storm Uri happened, they were saying that we were, I want to say it was seconds, but maybe minutes away, like 1 or 2 minutes away from the grid going down. And they were saying that if the grid went down, it would take 30 days to come back up. So those of you, again, who've been listening for a while, I remember saying that on the podcast, that they said that if it went down, it would take 30 days to come back up. I mean, come on. And so we have all these things. I mean, what would you do if that was your situation? And with all the craziness in the world, it's not too hard to kind of go there. You know, we talk a lot, you know, there's a lot of craziness in preparedness, right? We could talk about all the conspiracies, stories. We can talk about this and that, and all this kind of stuff happening. Like, you can really imagine this happening, right? People have imagined this, and a bad situation becomes worse. And you can see that happening. So the risk to power outages. Well, first of all, there's the loss of life. So you have hospitals, you know, during Winter Storm Uri, the hospital that is close to us didn't lose power. And then I believe, like, we didn't lose power as bad as other people. There's a nursing home really close to us. And I think that they were powering that and making sure that they had power. So I think we probably didn't lose power because of that. However, if it was the whole grid was going down, or a grid in a region was going down, hospitals would have backup power. But as soon as that power was gone, that backup power was gone, you're done, right? And so you have people on life support, people would die in hospitals. You have people at home on home medical devices that need to be powered. And you need a backup for that. And you need some kind of a plan to be able to do that. It would be terrible to be in like a really big grid down situation and then have someone pass away at home and then not be able to call like an ambulance or something. You know, I mean, you think about a bad situation spirals and can continue to get worse. And then, of course, you always have the loss of life, you know, because you don't have power. due to excessive cold or excessive heat. And so you can bundle up to a certain degree, right, and stay warm. But one of the things about here in Texas is people, I mean, the winter storm Uri that we had, people weren't prepared for that. And so people don't have the clothes, and we don't have the insulation for all of that. Our pipes are different than you guys that live up north. And so, you know, extreme cold, extreme heat without power to heat or to cool off your home, then, you know, there's going to be loss of life there. One of the things for me is loss of food. You know, I have a freezer. I have two refrigerators, two with freezers, I'm sorry, and then another freezer. And I have a lot of money invested in what I have in the freezer. And for me, I would not want to lose that. And so a lot of people would lose money, especially in these economic times that we have, that they would lose money in the food that they have in their freezer. Then what about the loss of jobs and income, right? So two things here. First, how much of your work relies on electricity? That's, think about, I mean, how much of your work you need? Your phones now are tied into the internet for the most part. You need to be able to have the internet to go and to look up things, to be able to send emails, to maybe even connect with other people. Think about just being able to see in a warehouse, being able to get around, being able to do the things that you need to do. And so you definitely need electricity to be able to power your jobs. But let's go here. Let's say we have a situation where we have power outages, and we're seeing these power outages for like a day or two at a time. And, you know, you'll know, like, okay, hey, your area is going to be out of power for a day or two. And then, then you'll have power for a couple of days, and then you're going to lose power. I mean, you can kind of maybe foresee something like that happening. What would your employer do? Are they going to say, okay, hey, we understand. We're going to continue paying you because we want to keep you as an employee? Or are they going to say, hey, when we lose power and we're not able to, power up, then we're going to, we have electricity, we're going to send you home without pay. And then if you are one of those that work in a place that, you got freezers and different things, maybe you work at a grocery store or a restaurant or whatever, and then they're losing power on a regular basis. They can't keep their cold areas cold or their freezers cold. So then in order to keep their business open, they're having to bring in fresh things every single week or however that would work. That's just not going to happen, right? Think about that. And so think about if your employer was to say, hey, we're not going to have power for a couple of days. We're sending you home without pay. Some at the beginning, like COVID, they're like, hey, we're going to pay you. We're going to keep you going. We're good. But then others are going to be like, we can't afford to do that. And so we got to let you go. Or, when you go home, we're not paying you. And so think about what that would look like in your situation. Then there's the loss of comfort. How many people get irritated? Now, come on, be honest. You can point to yourself, raise your hand, wherever you're listening to this to this podcast. When you get too hot or you get too cold, do you get grumpy? Do you get irritated? How long can you be in that kind of a situation before you start taking it out on others? So that you have that loss of comfort where it's like, man, I don't want to be, I don't want to be hot. I want to be cold. I like being able to come in from outside or whatever and turn down my AC a couple of degrees to cool off the house, or I like it cold when I go to bed or whatever it might be. Think about that loss of comfort. Think about the loss of entertainment. Oh my gosh, what are the kids going to do, right? Without their games, without their video games, they're going to, be out and fighting with each other, and you're not going to be able to watch your shows on television and whatever it might be, right? So there would be a little bit of a loss of entertainment. Some people would say that is really probably one of the big benefits from it. I know I had a cousin who went through some earthquake, and their infrastructure was down for a good amount of time, and they were able to play board games and with candles and different things like that. And he always refers to that was a great time because they were able to spend time together. So that probably would be a really good thing. But overall, we're so dependent on the grid. You think about it. You go into a room, you flip the switch, you walk out, you don't turn it back on, you know, or turn it back off. You just leave it on. We leave our homes cold, you know, because of the AC and all the different things. I mean, we're very dependent on the grid. And because of that, we need some kind of a contingency plan if things start to go sideways, right? So we really need backup power. Really need backup power. And so let me say this, right? And I really want you to get this into your head. So please hear me on this one. Backup power is not a long-term solution. I'm going to say that again and just follow me on this one. Your backup power is not a long-term solution. And we need to get that into our head right now. When I say long-term, I mean the end of the world as we know it long-term. Now, some people would think like long-term without power would be a week, right? I know when we had Hurricane Ike and we didn't have power for 3 or 4 days, it felt like a long time. But when I'm thinking long-term, I'm thinking like the end of the world as we know it and we've lost the grid. You've got to get it into your head right now that you're not going to be able to replicate your life on the grid when the grid goes completely off. So that's not going to happen. There is only so much fuel you can store. There is only so much time before your generator is going to break down and you can't fix it. There's only so much time that you can use your solar battery generator before that breaks down, before the batteries don't work anymore, before the solar panel, even solar panels won't bring in the same amount of charge, right? And bring in the same amount of kilowatts or watts to charge up those batteries like they have over time. Those are going to be able to break down as well. So kudos if you are an engineer or you're like MacGyver and you can MacGyver things out there. You might be able to get things to last a little bit longer, right? You might be able to put some things together, but you are still eventually going to lose power long term. It's not going to be like what you experience right now on the grid. It's going to be very, very different. So unless you are a multimillionaire with money to burn, you can't replicate your current lifestyle now with the grid and all the infrastructure if there ever is the end of the world as we know it situation. But you can have temporary backup power, even short-term power, when you need it. And that's what I want to talk about for the rest of this episode. So when we talk about backup power options, there's really two main ones. And then one that I'll throw in here towards the end. So you have generators and then you have solar battery generators, two ways that you can have backup power. So let's talk a little bit about these, the pros, the cons, and let's talk about this. So first up, we have gas power generators, or I'm going to say fuel power generators, because you can have gas, propane, natural gas. All right. Then we have on the other side, we have solar powered battery generators. And those are going to be like your Jackeries, your Blue Yetis, your EcoFlows that are, you know, a little hand. It's not little, but, you know, you can hold it usually with one hand. On some of the bigger ones, the Blue Yeti, I know they have some that work on a, or you can put it like on a little dolly. And because they're so big, you don't want to try to heave that around everywhere. But for the most part, you have those that connect to some kind of solar power or solar panels that would charge those up. So first up is the cost. So the initial cost for a fuel power generator is going to be a lot lower. But the ongoing fuel costs will add up over time. So it's not only just the fuel cost, but you got to buy gas tanks if you're gonna use, you know, unleaded fuel. You're going to have to buy propane tanks if you're going to do propane. You have to, you know, think about that. You need to buy oil for, you know, for the generator, because you're going to have to switch out the oil every so often, depending on your generator and how you use it. You need to have that maintenance schedule, and you need to be able to do that, right? So those are you're going to have the initial cost is going to be lower, but you're going to have cost over time that will begin to add up depending on how you use it. For the solar powered battery generators, you're going to have a higher initial cost up front, but almost no cost or very, very minimal cost that are ongoing, right? And so really, once you purchase it, you're good to go and you should be fine unless you're kind of adding to it or you're buying another solar panel or something along those lines. Now, there's a difference in the environmental impact. And so part of it is like, you know, the what it puts out. But really, when I'm thinking about environmental impact, I'm thinking more like noise pollution. For a gas or a fuel power generator, you're going to have a lot of noise pollution, right? And also, you're going to need to run it outside. You cannot run that on the inside. So because of that environmental, because it's giving off fumes and it's burning gas or whatever it might be, you burning oil, you got to do all that stuff outside. For the battery powered, that's clean energy, or at least it's considered a clean energy source. We all know that we're going to have this glut of batteries, and what are they going to do with all these batteries as all these cars and all these things start to fail. But anyway, it's considered more of a clean energy to the point that there's no emissions during the operation of it. So there's no noise and you can keep it inside. So that's a big deal. The fuel availability, you know, when you are dealing with a fuel generator, you know, gas, propane, natural gas, it's definitely going to require the fuel. And so availability might be limited depending on the emergency. If it is like a hurricane, you know, during Hurricane Ike, during Hurricane Harvey, your local gas station might not have power, but you could drive, you know, 10, 15 minutes down the road and you could get fuel there. So you would be okay there. If it was a complete grid down situation, you would only have what you have stored at home and that's it. And then, you know, like you're done there. For the solar battery generator, then you're really dependent on sunlight. And if you're in a situation where you don't get a lot of sun, that it might not be the very best thing for you. And so you got to really consider that. So you use your battery generator, you use it up, you're ready to go charge it outside with the solar panels. And even if you do have good sun, if it is or a good area, you know, where sun shines pretty brightly on a regular basis, and it's not cloudy, then you know if it's rainy or whatever, then you're not going to be able to get that charged up. And so you're really dependent on sunlight for that. And so it requires very low maintenance on that side of it, but you do need the sun to be able to do that. And whatever they say about solar panels, solar panels have gotten a lot better throughout the years, but some of them are like, yay, with, you know, this amount of sun, you can charge this up and, you know, it's a fast solar. Listen, no way. I mean, you're still going to have, they're getting better. Don't get me wrong, but some of the things that they say and some of the things that they promise, I mean, just know it's not going to fully charge your big old battery in an hour. You're going to need more than that. I kind of already talked about noise as far as like, you know, the environmental aspect of it, but then you have the OPSEC side of it as well. So fuel generators are going to be really loud during the operation. People are going to know that you have it. It's going to disturb the neighbors or the people that are there. If you're a light sleeper and you have that running, you're going to need to be able to, you'll have to just deal with it. The noise on the other side. So when you're dealing with like the solar battery powered, I mean, there's no noise at all. It's silent operation, right? So, I mean, that's great. That's going to be great for OPSEC. They'll be able to see lights on if you have lights on, but they won't be able to hear it. And so that's one of the things that you need to consider. The portability is another thing. For the fuel generators, a lot of the times they're going to be heavier. The bigger ones are going to have wheels so that you can and handle so that you can move them around. You also got to store the fuel. You've got to move the fuel. You got to transport the fuel back to your home. The portability of the solar generators are going to be a lot lighter for the most part. You can carry them in one hand unless you're getting a really big one that requires a dolly. They're easier to move around. And so they're easier to move from room to room to room if you're going to do that. If you are the portability aspect of it, one of the things that you need to do if you have a generator and you've never really had to use it yet is if you have it outside, you need to lock that down somewhere. You need to get a big chain. You need to get a big lock, a heavy duty lock, so that you can lock it down so that if people would hear it. And this happened in my dad's neighborhood many times during Hurricane Ike. People would come into the neighborhood, and it's a gated community, but because there was no power, the gates were open. People would hear the generators. They would come in. They would throw them on. In one situation, they threw the generator in a truck while the generator was still going and took off. Now, these people got in their vehicles and chased them, right? Because they're like, hey, it's our generator. So they threw the generator out of the back of the vehicle because, you know, they didn't want to continue this chase, or they didn't want to get caught, but it ruined the generator. So you need to be able to lock it down. People will take it. The portability aspect of a solar powered generator is you can keep it inside. You don't have to keep it outside, right? Or you shouldn't keep it outside. You need to keep it on the inside. I've talked about maintenance already. You're going to have to do maintenance like changing filters, changing oil. You need to do that on a regular basis with your fuel generators. With your solar power generators, more than likely, you're just going to have to clean off the solar panels every so often. Reliability, then, you know, you can pretty much, if your fuel generator is, you've been doing the maintenance on it, you've been testing it out, you've been doing all what you're supposed to do, it's going to be dependable for you. You're going to be able to start it up and go. Just as long as you have fuel, it's going to be dependable for you. The solar power generator is going to be dependent on the weather. And so again, you should have it charged up. They do a really good job of holding their charge. My EcoFlow, well, I go by there every so often and I just push it just to see where it's at. I mean, it holds its charge. So it's really cool that they hold their charge. But after you use it up, if the weather is not cooperating with you, you're kind of sunk on that. And so you need to be able to think about that. Now, if you are in a situation where it's not kind of the end of the world as we know it. And the end of the world as we know it, again, what I'm talking about is going to be short term. I'll touch on that just a little bit here as I get to the end of the episode. But if you are in a situation where the grid is failing in certain areas, so let's say you might not have it at home, but your workplace does. And that happened during Hurricane Ike. I had a teacher who didn't have power for a certain number of days at home, but she could come to work and she would take her shower in the morning. She would go to work and then she would bring a curling iron and get ready and do all that kind of stuff at school because, you know, we had power. If you're in that type of a situation, then you can use your battery backup in the evening time and then take it with you to work and charge it at work while you're there. And then take it back, you know, in the evening time when you go back to work or go back home. And so you can use it that way. So you'll have that aspect of it. But if you are in the way I guess I'm using this is we can experience these short-term power outages and we can get through them. If it was the end of the world as we know it, I want to have power to get me through to be able to use my food as much as possible, right? That's really what I want to use it for. I want to make sure that I can use my freezer. I mean, you got the canning that you can do. You have all that stuff. We're going to be barbecuing. We're going to be eating. Maybe we're sharing food with neighbors or whatever, but I want to be able to keep that freezer refrigerator going as much as possible or as long as possible because you got hundreds and maybe even thousands of dollars invested in food in there. So you want to keep that, but eventually it's going to be, you're not going to be able to continue that, right? So if you have these kind of options, you'll be able to go as long as possible, but then eventually these things are going to break down, like I mentioned earlier. And lastly, one of the cool things about, I guess, the solar battery generator is that you can make your own. And so there's been a lot of videos. I know I've shared a lot of videos and articles in the past about this. Even my friend Mick Rowland has an article that he has shared on his website about one that he made. Now, it's not going to look as nice as, you know, a Jackery or a Blue Yeti or an EcoFlow, but it will do the work. And so if you know what you're doing and you're able to put it together, you can have one of these and you buy a separate solar panel and you got to do all that stuff, but you can build one for a lot cheaper than you can buy some of these other you know, systems that are all put together already. All right. So then you've got to think about the people that are using it, and are they able to use it, you know, the way that they really need to, or if something, you know, went wrong, could they troubleshoot and all those good things. So I said that I would give you like a third option, and it's really not a true option for short-term power, but in a way it is, depending on how you think about it. So I've talked always about the portable battery banks, the kind that you can put in your pocket and you can charge your phones with them. And I believe in them. I think I've got a lot of different ones. I have purchased them, you know, I've had some given to me freely and all those different kinds of things throughout the years. The prices have really come down, and you can buy a really nice one that has a large capacity for a decent price now. In the past, it was just about charging your phone or maybe charging your tablet, but there's a lot of devices out there that you can charge now, or you can use with a USB. So you can hook up a fan if you need to be able to cool yourself. You can hook up lights, many different options of lights, and there's a lot of different things that you can do with these. And so that might be an option, like a small option, if you're just needing some light, or if you're needing to be able to cool yourself with a fan, that might be an option for you. So let me share with you what I'm doing. Again, my whole thought process in all of this is, when we have short-term power outages, I want to be able to get through them. I want to be able to save, you know, the food in the freezer and in the refrigerator and all that good stuff. And then, you know, if there is the end of the world as we know it, this stuff will last me for a little bit until it doesn't. But this is my story. So I have two Duramax generators. I have a smaller one that is a dual fuel that does propane and gas. But then recently I bought a triple fuel one, and it's gas, propane, and natural gas. And so it is the XP13000HKT. And it basically is, it's like, it is considered a whole house generator. It can be considered that. It is very portable. It doesn't stay outside like a Generac. But the way that I'm using it, I guess I wouldn't be able to use it as a whole home generator. And the reason being is that the different fuels, when they go through, when they burn in the generator, that they produce different wattage. So if I put in a, you know, gasoline, unleaded gas, and use that, then it would wind up being able to run my whole house, including my AC. So that's the great thing about it. If I did propane, then I would be able to possibly run my whole house, including my AC as well. The only problem is that in contacting Duramax, you can't use the regular 20-pound propane tanks that you would for running your gas grill and different things like that. Now I can run my smaller generator off those 20-pound propane tanks, but I couldn't run this big one. The propane tanks would freeze up because it would just be using the propane up too much. Then the natural gas. So natural gas, according to my electrician, I could theoretically run my AC, but there is that possibility that there might not be enough watts to start up and I could damage something. So he was like, if you're in a short-term situation, you do not want to run the risk of losing your AC, you know, just for this. In that kind of situation, use an AC unit, you know, like a window unit or something along those lines. And that's what I plan on doing. So as I've been thinking more about, you know, power outages and stuff like that, and I just have that nasty feeling that they're coming, and they're coming in a way that we're not going to like it. Started looking into this last year. I've always looked into it, but really kind of bit the bullet and purchased the what I needed to purchase. We had plumbers here because we needed to repipe our house, and so when they were here and they were doing that, I had them run a gas line off of my main gas line so that I could do natural gas and use a quick connect. So they were able to install that for me. It wasn't very expensive. So, and I trust these guys. Hey, let me say this really quickly. If you don't have guys like a plumber, an electrician, if you're always like when you need them, you're calling and you're trying to just find the best price. I mean, that's one thing. And I understand that, but really there is a big benefit when you have people that you're able to call on a regular basis, and you know them by name and they know you. And, you know, when you're in a situation where it's pretty severe, they might prioritize you over somebody else because they know you, right? And you're able to call them and talk to them and get questions answered, where others might say, hey, I'll come out and charge you, whatever. You know, they look at you more like a long-term, you know, business partner, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, so this is kind of the relationship that I have with this, the plumbers, and then also with the electrician. So anyway, the plumbers came out, they ran that line. I had the electrician that comes out to my house and he does a different work for me. He put in the transfer switch, and then he put in a safety switch. And really, it's just a thing that doesn't allow the circuit breaker to be able to, because when you connect to the transfer switch, you click the circuit breaker. And so it's a safety switch that no one can move over without switching off the circuit breaker, because you don't want to send power down the line if someone was working on the line down the line. And especially if you have a generator that's pushing out a lot of wattage, you don't want to do that to them. So it's just a safety precaution. So he put that in for me. I purchased the cord that goes from the generator to the transfer switch. And then I purchased a quick connect end for the generator, so that I have two quick connect ends on the gas line and on the generator, and I have a quick connect hose that I'm able to just go and connect. And it's a pretty big one. It's a half inch hose that I'm running. It's able to be, it's long enough that it can sit underneath my patio, and I'm able to lock it down, you know, with the chain and all that good stuff. I've run it a couple of times. I ran it once with the electrician. I wanted to just make sure that it was going to run. Everything was going to work like it was supposed to. And I just, you know, wanted to do that. I haven't had to run it because of a power outage yet. And so that, you know, that's been a good thing, but I have it ready to go if I ever need it. On the solar battery generator side of it, I have several. I have Jackery. I have a Jackery, and then I have an EcoFlow. And I like the EcoFlows are going to be a little bit cheaper. Their batteries are a little bit different than the batteries that you're going to find like in the EcoFlow and the Blue Yetis. They're not going to last as long, although you still are going to have like 1,500, I believe it's like 1,500 charges that you'll be able to go through. And so if you are someone that's using it, I know someone in the exclusive emo group uses it around their homestead. That's one thing. If you're using it for like backup situations or just to go camping, like 1500 uses is going to be a long time. I mean, more than likely, there's going to be something else that fails on the system before you get through all of it. But the Jackeries are usually a little bit less expensive because of the battery. So if you're going to go and look at one of these, really think about it. All right. Do your research on it. Like I said, EcoFlow and the Blue Yetis, and even some of the ones that they have like EcoFlows, they have different kind of batteries as well. And so you want to make sure that you get a battery that you feel comfortable with. You know, they have them all the way up from where you could power some lights and a little fan all the way up into some of these, like the Blue Yetis are like, oh my gosh, like you can power a whole house or whatever. I guess, I mean, it kind of looks like that from what they do. I am an affiliate for all three of those. If you are interested in purchasing those, I'll have links on the website where you can go and you can connect to these. And just so full disclosure, I don't have a Blue Yeti, but I know that a lot of the people on the exclusive email group do. And so they've talked about Blue Yeti. So I became an affiliate just, you know, if someone wanted to purchase a Blue Yeti, they could go through and use that. And it gives me a little bit of a percentage. It doesn't change your cost at all. And a lot of the times they have sales, all of these, you know, like right now there's a spring sale, so you can go and check them out. But I do have the Jackery. So again, full disclosure, I do have Jackery. I do have EcoFlow, and I do recommend both of those. I have solar panels for both of those, and I like them. They do not charge as fast on solar panels as they do when you connect it to the power, but, or, you know, to like you just your home power grid, but they do charge. And so that is one of those things that I do appreciate. It's not some of those things that, you know, it's like, hey, just buy this and, you know, you got power for the end of the world as you know it. You know, you just got to be very, very realistic about all of that. And I would buy a solar a battery generator. If you're not going to make your own, I would buy it from a reputable company like Jackery, EcoFlow, or Blue Yeti. I would not buy them from some of these that I see online or on Facebook or on YouTube or whatever, and they're very cheap. I just would not do that. And so anyway, so that's part of what I have in my system to be able to do short-term backups. I also have an inverter. I've talked about this one before for, you know, when, about Hurricane Ike and Hurricane Harvey. I was able to power my freezer just off of it. I mean, I think it's like a 2000 or 1500 watt inverter from Harbor Freight. I mean, I bought it early on and the sucker still works. So anyway, you run your vehicle. My truck has like a 30 gallon size tank. That's a big gas tank. You connect it to the battery while your car is running, and you're able to, you know, charge up or run your run your freezer, run your refrigerator, whatever you need to do, charge up your phones, do all that kind of stuff. And so that might be a situation or something that you have to be able to get you through a little bit. Like I said, my main concern when I'm thinking about this, I've got two of them, and really one is not mine. One is my wife's. So I guess it's mine. My main concern is the freezer and the refrigerator. I've got hundreds, maybe even thousands of dollars in meat in the freezers and all the condiments and all the things that are in the refrigerator. I do not want to lose that. So I would be happy to be able to have the power to be able to power that in short-term situations. But then also in, you know, if there was the end of the world as we know it, I would have be able to power it for a little while and try to use up as much as I could to where it wouldn't just go all to waste, right? So that's one of my main concerns. The other one, and this is my wife's concern, is just AC or the comfort of it all. And so if you're in a short-term situation, and like I said before, it's like, hey, are you one of those that get cranky when you get hot or cold or whatever it might be? It's like, if you can put a little bit of money into comfort, you know, if you can do that, why not do that, right? And so I've got all of that ready to go. The only thing I'm missing, I've been researching which AC, portable AC unit to purchase. It's been wintertime and now it's starting to now we have the AC on, so now I need to go ahead and get one. But I've been looking at a couple of different ones to use. And then what I would do in my situation is I've got plastic sheeting that I would close off the living room, and we would just cool down the living room, and we would sleep in there. We got, you know, bring in the air mattresses and all that good stuff, and we would sleep in there for comfort and not burn up and melt in the Texas or Houston heat like we experience so often. So those are my two main concerns right now. But again, as life changes and my situation changes, there might be more concerns, and I would be happy that I have already prepared for those types of things. Well, guys, like I said, on this one, I am going to link to the website, and I'm going to have an article there and the links that you can, if you wanted to go check out the full article from MSN, you can go check it out there. I'm going to have the links to, the Jackery, EcoFlow, Blue Yeti, if you're really interested in one of those. Again, just if you're interested, it's a blessing. If you use my affiliate link, it doesn't cost me or cost you any more. It's just a little blessing for me. And then I'm also going to link to some other articles that I've done throughout the years. And one that I did on just kind of like the portable battery backups and some of the things that you can do to, some of the USB things that you can use. And so I'll link to those and you can go check those out. So don't forget to check that out in the description. That'll be there for you. Well, guys, that is another Ready Your Future episode. Listen, if you want to hang with a community of preppers safe from the algorithms of social media, come check out the Ready Your Future exclusive email group. For $20 a year, you can ask questions, participate in discussions, and attend our virtual online meetups that happen twice a month. And with that, choose to live a more self-reliant life. Choose not to be so dependent on the government, grid, or the grind. Until next time, live with no regrets and stay prepped and aware. Peace.